Session number 26552,
Reel 6. Mr. Kinnear, Reel 6. We were talking about when you first went on board HMS Kempthorne. We were talking about the after starboard mess deck where you were. And you were mentioning that they had these three-tier bunks. And you,
that's right.
But you still had your hammocks. Now, how did you feel about bunks as opposed to hammocks? Because you weren't an experienced seaman. I'm not sure how much time you'd spent in hammocks. What did you think of them?
We thought the bunks were marvellous. Big, thick mattresses, you know. And they were marvellous. There was no doubt at all about it. So we didn't miss the hammock at all. And of course, the hammocks had to be stowed away somewhere out of the way. Now, just forward off, leading off our mess deck, was the sick bay, which was only a little tiny room. And, of course, the only person we had with medical knowledge aboard was the sick bay Tiffy, you know, and that was, he was just a rating the same as us, but he'd be like a male nurse is now, you see.
Now, what else was in your mess deck? Do you see what I mean?
What
else have you had?
Yeah, well, immediately below the bunks were your lockers. They were long, flat lockers. And they had about 2 foot diameter. 2 foot square, I should say. And you had to get all your gear in there, so everything had to be packed tidily. Everything folded away and packed tidily. Now, of course, with regard to your gear, especially your trousers, you know, your bell bottoms, they had the seven creases in for denoting the seven seas, you know, which is a load of rubbish anyway. So we used to fold them up and they'd be under your hammock, under your mattress, and of course the weight of you ensured that they were kept pressed. So we had that. Now then, when the bunks were put down in the down position, ready for sleeping in, they more or less touched the mess deck table.
That's in the middle then, is it?
That's, well, more or less central, yes, I suppose they've been. And you could actually stand on the mess deck table and get in your bunk if you wanted, you know, and vice versa, getting out. But you had your mess deck table and this form alongside kind of thing. Now, the mess deck table had raised parts around it, like a ridge, so that when the ship rolled, the plates went rolled, they wouldn't go crashing off. But they did, they went over the top when it was rough. It's, leading up from the, because there was the other side, you could go right round the other side onto the port side, you know, it's all confined, and of course there's 14 men in our area alone.
In your mess deck?
On our starboard side mess deck, and of course you had the equipment on the other side.
Now what about, which was the best bunk to have? Because I've heard people swear by the bottom bunk, the middle bunk, the top bunk. Which bunk did you have? Which bunk did you want?
Well, if I remember right, I was in, well, it depended, because eventually I was switched over to the port side for some reason. So I've slept in the middle and the top.
Which was your favourite?
Well, I think the middle was just about average anyway, but it never bothered me whether it was top, middle, or bottom. Because you were very agile in them days, you know, there's no problem getting in and out your bunk.
Now, what about the facilities? Because these were American ships, and they had a lot of American things on when they were first built. I'm not sure how long they stayed. Different ships, they stayed different amounts of times. Mm. We were aware of some things that weren't on Royal Naval ships, some American-style things.
For a start, there was no mattresses on Royal Naval ships, and that was one of the first things they took off. We went to Newport to have stabilisers fitted, mounting another, and it was adapted to our naval requirements. For example, they put extra depth charge racks on the deck, and we carried 200 depth charges there, and of course the weight of them didn't help when it rolled either, you know. But we had all that on top, and of course they were over the top of us, our mess deck, so when the ship rolled, all the charges moved. There was slight tolerance level on either side to allow them to be rolled up, you see, and even it was possibly a quarter of an inch, but when 200 depth charges are suddenly going vroomp as the ship goes over, and then the ship used to roll very, very quickly. It was a case of like that.
I'll come back to the rolling, but what else was at this refit? So they fitted a load more depth charge racks and a lot more depth charges on the ship. What else did they do?
They took out all the naval system, the US Navy system of, you know, the departmentalised trays you used to have with your soup in one, your spuds and what have you in the other, and the sweet. That all went for a bit, and then we went back to the good old naval style, you know.
So they took out the cafeteria mess in?
The cafeteria mess was removed, yeah.
And what about... What did you think of the cafeteria mess in?
I thought it was smashing. It was all right, you know, it's... The only thing was that while we were in the States, it was marvellous. Once the British Navy took over, it was rubbish.
Why? What was the difference?
Well, I'll give you an example. The first meal we had aboard after the commissioning, I don't know if it was on a Monday or a Tuesday, it was, what was it? Corned beef... A load of mashed buds with a dollop of corned beef stuck in the middle. That was our main meal. That was the first meal. And of course, we used to load up with bread. Prior to going to sea, they'd get as much bread aboard as they could. And you could be having that 2 or 3 weeks after. And you used to cut the green off the crust some month and another, you know, until it was all gone. Save stores, I should imagine, and save energy, whatever, you know, fuel.
And so, when did you get the refit was done at Newport for the general messing, was it?
It was done at Newport. I should tell you that we had marvellous bathrooms. The toilet facilities was very basic, but that was general throughout both navies, really. The toilet facility just consisted of one long bench with this tin trough underneath, kind of thing. That's
no division, or did they put that in?
There were divisions, but that was about all, you know. It's we had showers. Excuse me, we had showers fitted. Oh, we thought that was marvellous. It was in port, but as soon as we went to sea, the first day at sea, they would always say, you're using far too much water, it's using far too much fuel. Right, so they rationed it. And each ship that was on in the Navy did exactly the same. Always for the ratings. First they started unscrewing the rows and they fitted them with halfpennies to stop the water coming through, you see. And we found that out, so we removed the halfpennies. So that was the end of it, they just turned it off. And they'd only switch the water on at certain periods.
So how were you meant to get clean?
Well, that's a good question, because if you weren't clean, you were putting the rattle in any case, you know, if you had anything dirty on.
So they didn't have baths, did they?
Well, oh, no, it's no baths, no.
So it was just showers, but
showers and wash basins, yeah. A couple of wash basins. It was very good. They were very good.
Now, what about other things? They were meant. Some of them were meant to have things like ice cream makers, water coolers, a laundry.
Yeah, well, they did have ice cream makers aboard, but they took them out at Newport.
What about the
They had a laundry, but we kept that going, and of course you could take that down. And you had to pay for, you know, you paid so much per item to be washed, that, you know.
Did you use it, or did you still?
Not if we could avoid it, because you never had the money, you know, I mean. I was on. We got paid fortnightly in the Navy, and if you got paid, it was 28 shillings one fortnight. I got. That's £1.40, and the second fortnight, it was 30 bob, £1.50. But of course, we left an allotment home. I left an allotment of 7 and 6 a week. Home. That would have been additional kind of thing, you know. But don't forget, we had to buy everything. Some of that was kit upkeep allowance, KUA. You had to buy all your soap, all your toilet necessities, boot polish, anything, razor blade, shaving soap, all that, you had to provide all that, and of course you had to renew your uniform as and when required, you know, as things worn out, you bought them yourself, because you only got that one issue in the Navy. You got two of everything, that was it, the rest of the time you...
I think you did mention that.
Yeah, and of course we were still growing them days, you know, we were only 17.
So, now, what about, how did you get on with the lads? I mean, you know, the other seamen.
Oh, my messmates, oh, we got on very well. You know, you developed, you chummed up with a couple of the lads kind of thing, you know.
Now, who were your pals, and did you have any particular pals?
Yeah, I had a lad from Ely in Cambridgeshire. His name was Baker. And we had a fellow from Glasgow, Jock Cowie. But, you know, you alternated, you know. It depended what...
Did you get on well with most of them? Or all
oh,
of
yeah.
Well?
Oh, we always got on well, yeah.
Any trouble the most of that time? You know, early on, I mean, really. We'll come to...
No, there was only once we had a bit of a row with one fella, you know. But that was in port. That was trivial and over nothing, but...
So there was never... Not tension, you got on well.
Oh, we did get on well, yeah. Well, you had to. Because you had to rely on one another, you know, especially if there's anything going on, you know.
Now, what about the leading seamen and the petty officers? What were they like? How'd you get on with them?
Most of them were all right, you know, but... say, they were your mates as well, really. But we didn't have
even
much...
Even the petty officers?
Yeah, some of them were all right. Some of them were a bit what we call per pusser. But you just accepted that, you know. You know, it's at sea, if you had your cap flat back on the back of your head, you know, put that cap on square, you know, sort of kind of thing. You'd put it on as soon as you go around the corner, I'll go back. But generally speaking, it was used pretty good.
There were no bullies amongst them, the ladies seemed to have. I mean, they treated you fair.
Yeah, no, there was no bullies. You had your own leading hand in your mess, you see. And
do you remember yours?
Yeah, Buck Taylor.
So what was he like?
He was all right, a big bluff fella. He was an R&R man, you know, and he was a two badger. And so that meant he'd done 8 or 9 years in the Navy prior to coming aboard, you see. No, he was all right.
Was he helpful? I mean, you know, I mean, did he sort of guide you and help you while you were learning, or...?
Well, no, not really. See, eventually I was detailed off as boatswain's mate, and then
I'll come to that. Yeah, I'll.
And he was the senior quartermaster.
Now, what about the officers? Who was the lieutenant? Well, I presume he was a lieutenant commander in charge, the captain.
Yeah, his name was Alan Brown, Lieutenant Commander Alan Brown, R&R.
And what was he like?
He was a cracker.
And what was so good about him?
He was unflappable. He was extremely unflappable. You never heard him shouting and bawling and raising his voice, no matter what was going on. You know. And in actual fact, I met him after the war. It turned out we were more or less working for the same company.
And he knew his stuff?
Oh, he knew his stuff all right, yeah.
You had confidence in him?
Yeah, definitely.
And what about some of the other, say, the first lieutenant?
Well, the first lieutenant was a regular Navy man. He was a lieutenant RN, and his name was Bill Mann, M-A-N-N.
What was he like?
He was a little fellow, but he was very good. He was quite straightforward, you know. And we never had any great difficulty.
Was he a bit of a discipline? Sometimes the first lieutenants can be quite... strict.
Yeah, no, this fella set the routine and one thing or another, but no, I wouldn't say he was overbearing or anything like that, you know. In actual fact, he took me round the ship when I eventually said, well, I'm sick of being an ordinary seaman, I'm putting in for AB. So he took me round the ship, you know, and he was asking all sorts of questions, testing me. And at the end of it, he says, right, consider yourself an able seaman, can you?
I'll come back to that, but I mean, so he was reasonably, you know. Any other officers you remember in particular, or what were they like, you know?
Yeah, we had another chap there, and of course, he wore one of these Russian hats, you know, at sea. And so we nicknamed him Trapper Dodds.
Trapper Dodds.
His name was Dodds, Trapper Dodds. And because these were all subbies, you know, we had a midshipman on board, Jeffrey, what was his name? Can't think of his second name now, I can't remember. But he was all right, but as I say, they weren't very much older than us.
And it sounds like generally you liked your officers, you had time for them.
Oh, yeah, but we had an Australian officer aboard, Lieutenant Irwin, the sub-Lieutenant Irwin, I should say. So, no, we don't. We had a company officer, he was all right.
So, a good bunch.
They were, really, yeah. You must remember it was a small ship, and we were all interdependent upon one another when anything was going on.
So it'd be what you call a happy ship?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all right, we were happy enough.
And who do you think set the tone? Was it the crew themselves, or the petty officers, or was it the officers? Who made it a happy ship, or was it just everybody together?
Oh, I think it mainly was the lads, you know, the ratings. You know, we're always laughing, having the skylark, as we called it, you know. And so, of course, when he got his show, oh, it was great.
So they set the tone, as far as you were concerned?
They did, yeah.
Now, we've got you aboard ship, you're in your mess deck, you know, first few days, still in Boston. What happened next then? Did you go for the refit straight away, or did you do sea trials?
Oh, no, we went on, used to take it out for trials.
Now, what were the sea trials like?
Well, generally speaking, they were pretty rough, because the weather wasn't very good at the time, and because they were notorious for rolling these ships.
Well, tell me about this. I mean, you were never seasick, but no. How bad was the rolling? You know, what did you think of it?
Well, it was very bad. It depended on the weather itself, because if you're in a full gale, well, then you were in for it, because you couldn't go on the upper deck. Now, coming up from your mess deck, you had a companionway at a ladder, and a big square hatch on the top, which was at sea, you pulled down, you see. And in the centre of that, there's like a little manhole hatch. And of course, at sea, in the bad weather, that big hatch was down. You only had the little manhole open. You know, so that was it. So you soon got used to it, ripping up and down. But on deck, you had a lifeline rigged from forward to aft. From the accommodation forward, that is, you know, from the bridge structure aft. And we had these toggles. So, in an ordinary seaway, you know, where the when she's rolling slightly kind of thing, you could go along and use that toggle.
So the toggle had a ring round it, so it would go along?
Oh, you went along with it, yeah.
And it just ran along the rope?
And it ran along the rope as you went along. It steadied you as you went, you see. And, of course, once you got your sea legs, you walked accordingly. You didn't always have to use the toggle, because the ships were always moving, you know, unless it was absolutely dead flat, which was unusual, really. But when it was rough, that was all out of bounds. So you couldn't get on that deck.
With the toggles?
That was underwater. Because we're going, boof, right over, you'd have been thrown over the side or washed over the side, you know. So we came up through that booby hatch.
That's the little one.
And you went up through another hatch up onto the gun deck. And you proceeded along the gun deck then, which was higher up, you see. And that's the way you went forward, if you had to go forward.
And what about, I mean, how bad was the rolling? I mean, did it roll and pitch, or was it just rolling? You know, it was side to side, but was it going back, you know, that way?
It did everything. You wouldn't believe it. They went that way, they'd slide down the waves that way, they'd pitch that way. They were absolutely incredible, but when they were rolling, if you were beam on, the roll just went zoom, zoom, and it was quick as that. It was only a matter of seconds each way.
That must have caused seasickness amongst men. I mean, you didn't get it.
Well, a lot of seasickness long before that. In actual fact, I've seen lads sitting on the mess deck tables at night, fully dressed, frightened to go to sleep, because the ship was getting thrown about that much, you know. You had to see it to believe it, and if we were up in the wheelhouse, you know, on lookout on the wing of the bridge, or up in the crow's nest, and that's where you felt it most, if you're up in the crow's nest, but you could see your opposite numbers, you know, the other ships, and you could see them more or less right out of the water, and just the screw in the water, you know, and it's amazing. And then the next thing, down, and you see the screw, and the rear part of the ship, the after end of the ship, right out of the water, and the screw racing like hell. And of course, you got this when you were trying to sleep, as it went, come out, and of course, underneath our mess deck was the shaft tunnel with the two shafts going, you see. And when it came up, when the screw came up out of the water, you got this sudden racing, and then it go down again, and it settled down again, you know. But they were, they did everything but turn over.
Now, did other people being sick didn't bother you from the sound of it? I mean, you weren't seasick.
No.
Was it
in actual fact, I ate better when the lads were seasick, but they said, well, I don't want that, you know, that's gouts, you know, what would you get, pass it over.
Do you know why you weren't seasick? Have you any idea?
I don't honestly know. I felt queasy the first time we were out there. I felt I was going to be sick, but I wasn't. You felt queasy, and of course, if you'd had a few jars the night before, you know, that didn't help. But no, I was all right. And of course,
how many were seasick? I mean, were most seasick?
An awful lot was seasick. An awful lot.
So was that every
including the first lieutenant. And I always remember him on the bridge, and there was a young signalman there, and he was being sick. And he said, sorry, sir. He said, don't worry, son. He said, I've been going to sea for 8 years now. And he was in the Navy, you see. He was an RN officer. And he said, I'm always sick. And when we were on lookout duties on the bridge, and he had the morning watch, the first lieutenant always had the morning watch. That's the 4 till 8. And about 6 o'clock in the morning, the officer steward would come up. He was, sir, here's your tea or cocoa or whatever. And it was either toast or fried bread or something like that. So I can't remember exactly what it was. They said, oh, take it away, give us a lookout. We said, oh, yeah, come here. We always said, oh, the Jimmy, because that's the first lieutenant's nickname, is he? Did Jimmy be sick when we get up? We'd be all right about 6 o'clock, yeah.
Now, what about, tell me about, was lookout duty, was that part of your cruising days? What, tell me about lookout duties, both on the bridge, on the wings of the bridge, and on the, what was it like? How did you do it? What were you looking for?
When you were detailed off for a lookout, that was an ordinary seaman's duties kind of thing, you know, I'd say an ordinary, an able seaman as well, you know. But you would do your trick on lookout, and we all had binoculars, and your job was to scan the horizon, scan everywhere with them glasses, and you reported everything you saw. Even if it was the moon coming up, you had to report it. It showed itself as a light or something like that. If you saw a tin can floating, it would be object bearing. Whichever side you were on, red or green, green, Friosa, right? Okay, ignore, you know.
So they give you the clearance. I mean,
they give you the clearance, but you see, that gave them an indication of whatever was floating about. You know, same as the U-boat. If a U-boat came up and spotted all sorts of flotsam there, it says, oh, hi, somebody's been dumping here, and they'd set course for the way that was coming through on the tide, you see.
Now, when you got the binoculars, I mean...
Well, can I just tell you this?
Yeah?
With the binoculars, at night time, because it was black, the ship was darkened, And you were looking, it sounds daft, but you were looking for something blacker than the black of the night. Something more. And it was amazing what you could pick out eventually, you know, because your eyes got acclimatised to it, you know. And anything and everything.
Now, would you go along the horizon? How did you, I mean, I know you're looking at a bit of it. You had a set amount of degrees to look through, I presume, didn't you?
No, you went right the way forward to aft.
From where you could see, so 180 degrees.
So I'm on the starboard side. I'm looking for 180 degrees. Not only on the horizon, but anything leading up to the horizon as well.
What about up? Up the sky.
And up as well. Well, there you were looking for aircraft.
Now, but how did you do it? Did you do it in a pattern? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, or did you just swept. You'd sweep gradually. You know, you'd sweep everywhere gradually, but you were doing that continually.
So
and you'd go up and down like that to the horizon and whatnot.
So you'd change
At night time, you didn't have anything to worry about up there, really. You know, but in the daytime, well, of course, you'd scan everywhere. You'd scan the sky, the sea, the horizon.
How long would you be doing that for?
If I remember right, we used to do an hour's trick. An hour.
An hour. A trick was what you call a period on.
Yeah, well, it depended what ships you were on. You see, there'd be so many of you in there, you could be in a gun turret. Well, we never had turrets in this caboose, the stern of the B gun. And there'd be a crowd there ready to man the hedgehog or the gun. And when it was your turn, you went up and you either relieved the wheel for an hour, depending on what the ship was, but or you relieved the lookout.
Now, what would happen? What was going on in the bridge if you were looking out? You'd just be on your own.
No, we were in. Up on the bridge itself. Oh no, the officer of the watch was there.
Oh no, so I mean, but would you be stood out on the wing of it, just sort of looking with?
Oh yeah, you're on the wing of the bridge because they weren't big ships, you see, and you shouted object bearing so and so, you know, and the officer he'd get his glasses on. I've got it. Yeah, yeah, right. Okay, ignore. Carry on.
Now, was it tiring? Concentrating for an hour like that. It sounds like you'd have to concentrate.
Oh, it was, yeah. It was tiring, especially on the eyes. But don't forget, it was also cold and damp and very wet at times.
They're not covered bridges, are they? They're open bridges.
Oh, they were all open, yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
Now, what about when you're in the masthead? What was it like in the masthead? Because I'm thinking of getting up there first, but secondly, what it was like, you know, I mean, with the pitching, with the rolling, rather.
Well, when the ship was rolling like that, you see, he came up on the bridge and said, permission to relieve the masthead, sir. Yes, stand by. And of course, as the ship rolled, and the officer at the bottom would say, stand by, go. And of course, I've told you, the next thing is over there, like that. So you get hold of the ladder, you're on the ladder. And of course, you knew what was coming. And of course, no sooner you're on the ladder, and the ship's rolled one way or the other, you know. But eventually, you went up and you had to go up past the the crow's nest to let your man out. And he'd come down, and then you'd cut down a couple of steps, get in.
Now, what were you getting in? Can you describe what the masthead, you know, the lookout post was?
Yeah, just a big upturned bucket. Nothing in it.
How big?
That's all it was. It was about 3 foot high, something like that. Yeah, but I'd say it was no more than 3 foot, 3 foot six, 4 feet maybe the most, if that.
And how wide?
It was diameter. It was about 3 feet diameter, I suppose.
Now, I mean, were you allowed to crouch down in it, or?
No. You were there, and you had to scan that. You scanned all the horizon, both sides, as far as you could see.
Continually.
Oh, continually, yeah. And because you were in the best possible position, you see.
Well, I presume you should have sighted anything first from up there. I mean, if you were on that.
Yeah.
Because you were higher, you should have seen him.
Yeah, but unless you were sweeping and it's a periscope suddenly come up on the other side or something like that, you see.
So, how bad was the roll? Because presumably the rolling was worse the higher you got up.
But you just jammed yourself in position and that was it. And you just carry on. You couldn't sit down. There's nothing to sit down on.
Did you ever feel as if it was going over?
Oh, yeah, well, you got used to it. You say, well, there we are, but you still had to do your job, and you had to concentrate on your job.